Hi everyone, you're listening to Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. This show is all about building a hub of relevant, insightful, and actionable business insights that can help drive greater performance and innovation. I've worked with several tech startups myself and know from experience that success is underpinned by a passion for continual learning and growth. So I'm grateful to have the opportunity to speak with our guests and learn from their stories. If you enjoy this podcast, you can download the free ebook featuring my personal podcast highlights from the past 2 years at www.venturi-group.com/podcast-ebook. If you're looking for more information on today's episode, just head over to the Venturi website to check out the show notes. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show. Today's guest is Vladimir Vukasevic, co-founder and CEO at Mural.
Good job with the show, man. I'm really interested to hear really all about you, all the things you're working on. Being in New York, there's a lot of exciting projects that you've worked on in the past. So, you know, me being an ex from startup background myself, I'm always compelled to have, you know, entrepreneurs on the show and kind of get their thoughts. So, first of all, thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
I want to really dive straight in, and it's actually funny, I haven't really started a show like this in a while, which I suppose my audience is probably wondering, like, why not? But I was probably thinking, let's just do it this time. And I really want to start with your background because, I noted that you had kind of a management consulting background, and funnily enough, I have a lot of friends who are my ex-management consultants, and a lot of startup founders seem to come from management consulting. I have no idea why that is, but maybe you can kind of elaborate and maybe identify some of those traits and why you think they seem to be such a good fit for people who inevitably go on to start businesses.
It's because we hate finance.
So you have to pick something coming out of college. I think that so my name is Vladimir. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Mural. I was born in Belgrade in Serbia, and I moved to the U.S. when I was a kid, grew up here in New York, went to university here, studied economics and philosophy. So I was always really interested in the intersection of technology, culture, and business or commerce. And so coming out of school, I had the option of working in finance or kind of the more traditional kind of post-university courses, but I felt like management consulting was the most kind of educational while still experiential. So that's why I chose it, is because I wanted to keep learning but still get paid. So I did that for 2-3 years or so, primarily focusing on digital technology and digital strategy, and helping big companies like Citibank, Pfizer, Thomson Reuters, figure out what to do with this thing called the smartphone. Like the smartphone was coming up at that point, late 2000, kind of 6, 7, 8. And what I ended up doing was I got to travel around the world. I got to go to India, Japan, Singapore, to learn about how they were using the smartphone, digital technology as a whole, and apply that to these big corporations. And that was just like an incredible experience as a 22-year-old, 23-year-old. And I think the most valuable part about working as a management consultant is just the confidence that it gives you. Because the biggest lesson I learned working as a management consultant is that I learned that there's no trick to things. You know, people just figure it out and they do it. Even the big CTOs, CIOs, even CEOs of some of the largest companies in the world, they're just people. They're people with good experience, with higher than average level of intelligence. But in the end, they're just figuring it out. And I think that gave me the confidence to move forward and think about starting my own company.
It's so funny that you say that, because people tend to ask me as well, what you think, you know, the greatest strength is, where does your skill set lie? And my favorite answer is always just my, you know, absolute belief in being able to figure stuff out. And then, of course, I don't just leave it so open-ended, but that's the general response. And, you know, I think that is, like, absolutely true. You know, and that's, I think, my great skill. It sounds like, you know, you feel the same way. And I think, you know, I came from a startup background. My first job was with a seed round startup that was kind of really working toward building a new marketplace. So it's something that really didn't exist. And that was a lot of that. And I think anyone who's been in that kind of scrappy growth phase of a startup is probably not too dissimilar to management consulting in the fact that you have to wear a lot of hats. You have to just figure a lot of stuff out. And I think if you have the belief in yourself to just do it, I think we can do it. I think there's too many, kind of blinders and smoke effects going on of how, you know, talented and amazing some people are. And I think it's just the people who have the confidence to figure stuff out are the ones that, you know, inevitably kind of do well. So clearly build that confidence up during your management consulting days.
Yeah. And I think it's also resilience too. One of the big things that I see that differentiate successful entrepreneurs from people who get stuck is the ability to keep moving forward, even if that involves, you know, moving sideways, you know, taking a step sideways or even backwards in some cases is better than staying still. And I think that level of resilience on top of being able to figure stuff out, those two traits I think are the most important for an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I agree. So that transition phase, you know, from obviously being paid, like, you know, quite a comfortable job, I can imagine, you know, that's a hard bit because it's funny as well that you kind of built that confidence and that skill set up during management consulting, but also to that same effect, the thing I always find strange about management consultants and why they go into entrepreneurship is, you know, you make good money as a management consultant, you know, it's quite a comfortable job. It's a well-respected job. You could have a nice life, you know, if you just ticked along and became a management consultant, maybe climbed the ladder a bit, you know, and that would be it. So making that transition into something where nothing's guaranteed, you probably didn't even make a salary, you know, at the beginning. How did you manage that transition? I know it's never an overnight thing. There's always a kind of a phase. What was that kind of phase for you?
Yeah, I think I benefited from not knowing how hard it was going to be. I was, you know, 20, I think almost 25 years old at that point. I had gotten kind of antsy in my consulting experience. I realized that I was telling other people what to do, but I wasn't actually building anything. I would go from project to project, and it was really fun and interesting and educational, but it wasn't leaving the mark I wanted to leave in the world. And so in some ways I just kind of jumped into it as a 25-year-old kind of gullible, naive young man who wanted to do something and leave a mark in the world. And I think that gullibility and naivete helped me actually, because if I had known some of the things that I would experience in the last 8-9 years as an entrepreneur, it would be tough to make some of those decisions. So I think the transition was pretty sudden for me. I just quit my job. I started spending my savings account that I had saved up over the last, you know, few years at that point. And I just started building the company that I wanted to build. And my first company was a company called Rocket Hub. And it was in the crowdsourcing and crowdfunding space. So we were helping entrepreneurs and artists raise money online. And this was late 2009, early 2010. So this concept of crowdfunding was completely new. So it was really exciting. It was a new industry. It was a startup. And that kind of adrenaline rush really helped me get through the first year and a half or so.
Yeah. So what's the first, you know, you build your first company, you know, you're probably got your Mac in front of you, blank screen. You know, what's the first move? You know, you talked about, you know, you start to kind of spend, spend some of the savings, et cetera. What's the priority? You have to, of course, get a minimum viable product out there and then maybe try and raise some money. But, you know, what's the first thing that you really started to spend on, and how did you kind of come to that decision in those early days?
Yeah, I think early kind of experiences for us. So RocketUp was basically a marketplace. It was connecting people who were looking to raise money and then people who were giving money so the hardest part of a marketplace is getting – it's like the chicken or the egg problem. So can you get supply or demand figured out and going so that the market can be built? And for us, really our earliest insight was that the key for us was the actual supply. So it was the people who were looking to raise money, whether it would be an entrepreneur or a musician or a filmmaker or a craftsman. They were the ones that were really key. They were our true customer base. And so the first 6 months to a year was really spent talking to these people and getting to know who they were, getting to know what their requirements were so that we could build. We had an MVP at that point, but it was very rough. We needed further market information and validation to get to the next level. So we spent the 6 months not sitting by our computers, but actually talking to our key customers. I think that was the biggest insight is like we can't be just sitting in a room tinkering without true knowledge and true feedback. And so it was very much kind of the lean startup approach in terms of getting an iterative process in place based on this consistent feedback. So the fact that we weren't indoors kind of tinkering was the most important part of those first 6 months to a year.
Yeah, it's interesting that you kind of done that. I think it's the proactive approach, isn't it? I think there's a difference between, you know, sitting there as you kind of framed and looking at what's happening and trying to figure it out and actually proactively going out there. Yes. And being vocal. I think there's a difference, and I think there's that is a lot of the time what people, I think, tend to get a little bit confused by is the two, and there is a difference, you know. Because, you know, the data will show you certain things, but I think until you actually go out there and figure out the behavior side of things, you don't kind of truly understand the kind of missing piece to it. It's funny, actually, we're kind of looking at a similar project ourselves, you know we're 10 years old, but it's you can never get enough of that, and it's amazing the things that you find out. And I think that people with all the analytics tools and stuff can become stagnant. Don't get me wrong, that there's tremendous value in that, but I think you can become stagnant if you're not being as proactively and actually having conversations with people.
Yeah, and it leads to nuggets of information that can then be used to dive into the data. But it's that kind of human inspiration that leads to these insights, I think, that is just wildly important, particularly in the early days.
Yeah. Agreed. So, you know, to the point where I suppose you're up to now, as much as you were with the first project.
Yeah.
Keeping up with growth, you know, how to manage that growth. We've talked quite a lot on the show about, you know, cultural fit. And especially as you scale, it's kind of a fine line between, you know, creating structure and creating bureaucracy. There's a clear difference there. I think people, for whatever reason, misconceive that a startup, you know, is a completely open, horizontal organizational structure and kind of a free-for-all. That's not necessarily the case. You can take structure and, you know, initiatives from corporates with that regard, but the difference is not having that bureaucracy, not creating those layers, and not allowing that to bleed into the culture. Be interested to get your kind of take on that, and how much of a conscious emphasis you actually put on that scenario.
Yeah. So for my first company, for Rocket Hub, we ended up getting acquired pretty quickly. So after about 3.5-4 years or so, and the biggest we had ever built up the team was 8-9 people. So it was still a pretty small team when we got acquired. And then I pretty much rolled over my entrepreneurial experience and inspiration into my current company, into Mural. And now at Mural, we are over 20 people, 23, 24 people. So that's much different. When you have a small team where everyone can sit in the same room all the time, that's almost like, you know, like you said, a consulting project where you are everyone wears multiple hats, and then you can trust each other fully because you have full insight and overview as to what everyone's doing at all times. When you have 10, 15, 20, 25 people, that complete oversight and awareness goes away. So building out the team in a way that is scalable, I think, is just tremendously, tremendously important. And really, what I look for at this stage of the company, probably until we hit maybe 40, 50 people or so, is really three things. One is still that kind of entrepreneurial perspective and that element of resilience that comes with being a self-starter and being an entrepreneur. I think we're going to still need that as an organization. The second part is the ability to figure shit out. At a startup, we're all problem solvers. And because of that, I think I cannot just still look for complete subject matter experts or hardcore people who are focused on one thing. We're still wearing multiple hats at this stage. And so the ability for someone to put on their engineer hat at some points, but then also put on their management hat and lead a small team of engineers, like that's very, very key for us. So it's like we're still at the stage where people are wearing two or three hats during a particular day or week or month. And then really the third part that we look for is a level of emotional intelligence. And that's tough to test for. I mean, there are some tests and there are some kind of ways of measuring it for people. But in the end, that comes across after you've worked with someone for 2, 3, 4 weeks. So generally in our hiring process, we like to start kind of a temp to perm type of experience where we'll bring someone on, we'll do a project with them, and then if that seems to be successful, then we bring them on as a full-time employee. So having that experience in the trenches with someone for a meaningful amount of time is a great way of gauging that level of emotional kind of maturity and emotional intelligence that we feel like is key for us to be successful. So it's those three things: the entrepreneurial spirit, the ability to figure out problems at multiple levels, and that emotional kind of maturity is really the three main characteristics for us right now.
Yeah. Like that a lot, and I wonder whether did you learn, you know, from your first experience with building Rocket Hub, was there things that you did differently? What did you take from that first experience in a have you done anything differently at this point?
That's a great question. I think that one of the biggest insights that what I've got from Rocket Hub is that the danger of a lack of diversity. To be honest, our team for Rocket Hub was early on was like 3 or 4 white dudes, and we had different backgrounds, but it was still a unique and unique level of experience that we were losing by all being, you know, 4 white men. And so from the get-go at Mural, we realized that for us to be successful, and that's really important because we're a combination of art, technology, and design. So we touch a lot of different worlds. We needed to have a team that was diverse and that touched a lot of different worlds in a lot of different ways. And so from the get-go, we had a conscious effort to have different people contribute different things to the team. And that's paid off really well for us. What it creates sometimes is a little bit of extra friction because people bring very unique and very different perspectives. But in the end, it actually leads to better decisions. What I found at Rocket Hub was that decisions were too easy. Like because the 3, 4, 5 of us were so similar, we would make the same kind of thought pattern and we would think in the same way. Whereas here at Mural, we come at things so differently from the different people that work here that it leads to something that is often a much better outcome than if we were quick and easy in terms of kind of getting along and coming to decisions. So it's the power of diversity. And I don't mean just in the traditional sense, but I mean in terms of geographic sense. I think I mean in terms of what schools people went to, kind of economic background that they had. All these different things lead to better outcomes for us.
I just love that. I love that turn of phrase you used. You know, the decisions were too easy. I think it's brilliant. I think that's so true. It's weird as well. I think you kind of know deep down that it was too easy, don't you?
Yeah.
There's that you know, that same feeling that you might get when you're about to go, you know, on holiday or something, and you feel like you've left, you know, probably left all your swimsuits at, you know, at home. It's kind of that same sense that kind of kicks in, isn't there?
Right.
You can't figure out, so you just go, oh well, yes, it makes sense, and then you kind of carry on with things. It's really interesting that you kind of say that, because I bet there's a lot of people kind of who will listen back to this and scream at that and go, yeah, that's so right. And it's funny because I talk with a lot of data people, and I want to get onto obviously the space that you're occupying at the moment, you know, in the IoT space and,
yes,
and the connective hardware. But just quickly as well, you know, the people who I've had on the show from various data backgrounds and CDOs, you know, data scientists, a variety of different people, the one thing that they are kind of most excited about with, you know, this relevant for what you just mentioned, is that data doesn't seem to have that kind of linear path to it like I think a dev does at the moment. So the beauty of the space at the moment is that you are getting people from a variety of different backgrounds. That's really adding to, you know, how quickly that space is accelerating, and, you know, some of the creative takes and projects that people are able to work on, because people are coming from such a variety and diverse background.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting. And obviously that kind of alludes quite strongly to the connective hardware and IoT space. So obviously, again, a really fascinating area that obviously you're occupying now. Did it just make sense then to get into this space, and you know, how did that kind of come about?
Yeah, so at Rocket Hub, some of our key users were creatives. So we had musicians, filmmakers, writers, directors, and also visual artists. And what I realized through my experiences was that visual art was still very much kind of left behind compared to these other forms of media. So if you look at music, film, television, even writing, all these forms of media have had their big democratization moments, particularly in terms of distribution and reach, whereas visual art is still trapped. It's trapped on the low end in kind of the cheaper poster business. And then there's the high end, the museums, the galleries, and the auction houses. There's no accessible, democratized middle market for people to safely experience art in their home, learn about art, and still be able to enjoy it in a beautiful way. And so when Rocket Hub was acquired, this problem was nagging me, and I said, let me tackle it. Let me approach this. Let me try to use my, you know, technology side of the brain to take this market gap that I was feeling personally and try to fix it. And early on, we realized that the only way to really fix this problem and to make art a part of people's daily lives, which is our mission, was to have a connected hardware physical product. Something that looked and felt beautiful, that you could put on your wall. It felt like a painting or a photograph or an illustration, but had the technological backing to allow for that dynamic, democratized experience, so that you can access an artist or a museum or a gallery from across the world instantly through this product. And so for the first year, we were building, you know, the product. We were prototyping it. We were incubated out of an artist co-op here in New York. So our technologists were working with the artists, the photographers, the designers, to create a product that would be acceptable to everyone, that the artistic community would embrace and use as a new medium, and that our customers would want to have in their home and to hang proudly in their living room, their bedroom, or their office. It was very interesting how we've combined art and technology in a way that is really leading to this IoT product that is meant to kind of just seamlessly fit into people's lives. And so that creates a lot of interesting challenges and problems, which we've been pretty good at tackling.
I think it's amazing, mate. I think the IoT space is fascinating, and I think it's only going to be a positive thing. I think people have misconceptions, really, about the functionality. I think maybe irrationally from a jobs perspective and a jobs availability perspective for people with outdated skill sets and such. But I think just in general, it's really going to be able to enhance our lives in such a positive way. And clearly, you felt quite passionately about this space. And I think the application, will far exceed, what we're considering at the moment that it will.
Just to consider, like in North America alone, there are a trillion walls. That's a trillion with a T, where people hang art and photography. So we're taking an IoT product that is fundamentally connected to the internet at most times, and we're approaching this trillion wall market, and that's going to lead to a lot of really interesting and fun things.
Yeah. Well, I think so. I think it's a particularly interesting space, isn't it? I saw something, I think, on Netflix not too long ago, a documentary about art. And yes. I can't remember what it was called now, but it was quite interesting. And it was just sort of going through how the marketplace works and how regulated it is and all of that kind of stuff. So I'd assume that's probably, pulling on some of your heartstrings anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's an old market. It's existed for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and it hasn't really been changed in that time. So what we're going after is the ability to kind of raise the level of awareness and experience so that people can, in the same way you can name, 10 actors or 10 musicians of the current age or the current day, we want to have, we will succeed when people are able to name 10 living, breathing artists that are making art in the present. And most people, even myself included, have a tough time of doing that right now. And so if we've done our job right, that will be as easy as naming your 10 favorite football players.
Yeah, I like it. excuse me. That's the cough catching up with me there. You guys are based in New York. I was commenting before on the picture that you had over in California. Why New York? I suppose, maybe you had roots there, but it seems to be an interesting space at the minute for tech. I think traditionally, we're seeing a lot of fintech startups, but it seems to be kind of diversifying a little bit. What do you kind of look at, think about now and how far kind of New York tech hub has come along?
It's fascinating to see it kind of mature. When I started Rocket Hub in 2009, we had a really, really tough time finding engineers and technical talent here in New York. We had to outsource a lot of the early work to California and then outside of the United States as well. And so when I started Mural in 2014, I realized that we didn't want to do that because this was such a hands-on, intricate product that we needed to have most of the technology team here with us working all the time together. And we had a much easier time finding the right technical talent in 2014 than we did in 2009. And that was only 5 years after. And so that's really an interesting point because it completely mirrors what we're seeing in New York, is that we're seeing this startup ecosystem driven by a lot of different factors, really flourish. And it's not – fintech is definitely a big part of it, but we're seeing media, technology companies, IoT companies like ourselves. MakerBot was made here in New York, Quirky, Canary, the camera company. There's a lot of different physical product companies now that are starting to grow. Peloton is another one that connects exercise equipment to the internet. So this market here in New York has been driven pretty much from the grassroots up But then there are things like new universities, new engineering hubs that are coming top down to support what we're building. And then in addition, like the big guys, you know, the Googles and the Facebooks of the world are starting to take New York seriously. Google just bought their second building here in Manhattan. So they are very much no longer just concerned about the media side of the business here, but they're actually recruiting for engineers and talent here. So that makes the ecosystem and the environment just generally better than it was 5 to 10 years ago. And I think in a few years, we'll be on par, if not is surpassing some of the other tech hubs around the world. So I feel great about being in New York. And then the final bit that I think New York has in terms of an advantage is that we're right here in Soho in New York. So that means we're next to some of the best art galleries in the world. We're next to some of the best brand designers and creators and media companies in the world. And I think that's very hard to replicate anywhere else. I mean, maybe London, Paris, New York, and maybe San Francisco, like and now some of the Asian capitals as well. But like, it's a tough ecosystem to replicate. And I think New York has something really special to offer when it comes to tech plus all these different industries supporting each other.
Yeah, that's an interesting take on it as well. I think that a lot of people go where the tech is, but maybe that's the problem. Entrepreneurs aren't are kind of getting caught up in a little bubble, and the entrepreneurship side of it is lost. You know, there was a guy who I'm friendly with was mentioning the other day that he, he thought that it was interesting that entrepreneurs we're all trying to come up with this kind of one in a billion idea, you know, trying to make the next kind of super technical widget. What happened to the entrepreneurs who are actually just trying to buy something and sell it at a profit? You know, I mean, that's like a basic example.
But commerce.
But that's commerce. That is commerce. Yeah. That's where the supply and the demand is. And I think it's very true. Tech hubs seem to be not as much energy coming from them. You're looking at a New York and even a Boston, London, stuff like that. They seem to be coming up with like the great concepts, and maybe it is that exposure to things outside of that kind of super technical world that really does add value to your creativity. And and nicely brings us back full circle to what you were mentioning at the beginning. Excuse me, about being able to just communicate with people and communicate with different industries and get that kind of honest feedback about what they actually want. And maybe that's why we're starting to see more and more success in these kind of metropolitan areas like New York.
Absolutely. I think we can walk out the door and interview our customers, our suppliers, all parts of the ecosystem that Mural participates in. And that's very precious and very valuable.
I think that answers our question pretty well about why New York.
Yeah.
Vlad, it's been a pleasure, mate. We're at half an hour now, and I know you've got a hard stop, so we'll leave it there. But thank you so much. I really enjoyed the chat, and it's exciting to talk to people like yourself. So really appreciate the time.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.